The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to our Friday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Cats on the road this weekend to play at Mississippi State tomorrow. We'll talk about that and more college hoops with Larry Connolly, longtime analyst on the SEC and college basketball, and, of course, a Wildcat legend as well. And also, Mike DeCourcy joins us on Fridays from the Sporting News. So that's our guest lineup. It's presented by Sleep Outfitters and sleepoutfitters.com. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. The breaking news today is Matt House, Kentucky's defensive coordinator, reportedly leaving for the NFL. ESPN reporting that he's going to be the new linebackers coach for the Kansas City Chiefs. And here's how you connect the dots on this. The Chiefs, after losing in the AFC Championship game, fired their defensive coordinator and hired Steve Spagnuolo for that job. Steve Spagnuolo worked for the Rams for 3 years, where Matt House was also one of his colleagues. So the new DC for the Chiefs has a connection with Matt from back then, so not surprising that he would reach out to him given the job that Matt House has done here at Kentucky. It looks like this is happening. It's not confirmed yet, but if it indeed does happen, would certainly wish Coach House well. Great guy. I've enjoyed getting to work with him. What a fantastic job he did this last season, in particular with the Kentucky defense. Love the way he was creative in moving people around. You would see formations with Josh Allen and Boogie Watson on the same side, different personnel packages. They really did some creative things to exploit the advantages that Josh Allen had, and give Matt House a lot of credit for drawing that up. So kudos to him, and wish him well if indeed he is headed off to the KC Chiefs of the NFL. And, you know, if he does well there, that could be the stepping stone to a DC job in the NFL, maybe a head coach at some point. So I would understand the move if that indeed does happen. Kentucky at Mississippi State tomorrow. State has lost three of its last four, but the two home losses were each by 4 points. In the game at Rupp, Kentucky won convincingly, held State to a season-low 55 points. I think it was 72-55. P.J. Washington had a big game with 21. The Mississippi State bigs were a non-factor. We were talking about that with Mike Pratt yesterday. And they've shot it miserably, 35%. They were 19-61, 3 of 23s. Calipari, after that game, said they missed shots they would normally hit. And I think he's right. Kentucky's playing better defense than it was then. Even though the numbers looked stellar for Kentucky in that game. But there were some open looks that State had that they didn't hit. And I've thought that this would be a very difficult game. I think it's going to be a big, big deal, obviously, in Starkville when Kentucky comes to town. But they have very high hopes for this team. They haven't been to the tournament, I think, since 2009. Right now, I think they're safely in. But if you look at their schedule, if they would take several losses, and there are spots where they certainly could down the stretch, they could play themselves onto the bubble. And this would be a game where this would firmly, I think, put them into the NCAA tournament if they could get Kentucky tomorrow. So Kentucky will get the A game, I think, from the Bulldogs and from their crowd. I think I saw Jerry Tipton tweeted out yesterday it's going to be a whiteout down in Starkville. Also tomorrow, if you're watching on CBS, tune in a half hour early while you also have the radio pregame show on and you're listening to my interview with Cal. But you're watching the bracket show on CBS at 12:30, half hour before tip time. And the selection committee chairman will be there, and they'll have their first look at what the top four seeds in each region would look like if they were doing selection Sunday this weekend. Here's my prediction. Virginia in the East, Tennessee in the South, Duke in the Midwest, and Gonzaga in the West as the ones, and Kentucky as the two in the East to Virginia, Michigan in the two in the South to Tennessee, Houston is the two in the Midwest, and North Carolina is the two in the West. So we'll see. I think it's going to be interesting to see. I think Michigan and Kentucky both have better cases for a one seed than Gonzaga, but if Gonzaga's there tomorrow and they don't lose, then I don't think they're moving off the one line. So that's going to be one of the interesting things to watch tomorrow as they reveal this bracket. And the Kentucky women won last night on the road at Auburn, 78-68. They're 19-5, 6-4 in the league. Ryan Howard had 19 points and 6 assists. Got to get to a break. It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Larry Conley is going to be with us when we come right back.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
John Hale, Courier Journal, just tweeting out that he says he's told Matt House to the Chiefs is not final. So maybe Kentucky's going to try to make a run at keeping him. But I would certainly not be surprised if they did. It just might be very difficult to do, especially if, and I don't know if Matt has had an urge to get back to the NFL, but if he has, that could be a part of it. So we'll just have to see how it plays out. But that's the story that is percolating today. Matt House to the Chiefs. ESPN says it's going to happen, but John Hill says wait and see. So we'll wait and see. Larry Conley joins us on the Kentucky branded hotline to talk a little.
Tommy, how are you?
I am doing well. Larry, how about you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you're leading off with some football stuff.
It's a big year in football.
Getting ready to finish this season, particularly the one that runs into February, which is the NFL. But Kentucky had a great year this year. It was just terrific.
It was a lot of fun, and they seem to have things trending in the right direction, which is tough in this league, as you know.
Yeah, the other day I missed the paper, or the Atlanta paper here, that put out all of the good signees, and I assume Kentucky had a pretty good recruiting year in football.
Yeah, they did. Rankings wise, it ended up about where they have been, but they've done really well with the players ranked where they've been. So I think they're probably going to get a little bump out of this year's season in the next recruiting class because so much of the work is done a year or two ahead of time.
Well, let's talk about something that's a real sport: basketball.
I got to ask you one thing. We do a history note on the show, and so I'll go ahead and throw it out. It's our Donato Slice of Wildcat history. This day, 1964, was the last time a Kentucky player had 30 rebounds in a game, and it was a game you played in. There were four double-doubles with points and rebounds. You had one, but Cotton Nash had 23 points and 30 rebounds. So when I went back and looked at the box score, game was 102-59, Kentucky beat Ole Miss. Kentucky was 47 of 125. Ole Miss was 24 of 84, so there were 138 missed shots. No wonder he got 30 rebounds.
Well, of course. That's what happens when you miss a lot of shots. You get a lot of rebounds.
Man, that was a lot of shots in those days.
Well, we didn't have a shot clock back then. You know, because of rules, they have changed everything, and which has really made a serious adjustment in what we've been able to accomplish in the way of numbers over the last couple of decades. And I think about that all the time when I look at these numbers. And now it seems like, you know, everybody's taking more three-point shots now. I mean, I at least I think they are, except for Kentucky.
Yeah.
They don't take nearly as many. And, in fact, I think they're last in the SEC in three-point attempts.
I think you're right.
And I sit here and I watch all of these games, which has been a lot of fun for me. And knowing that John has all the years he's been coaching, that Cal has decided that this year he's not going to shoot as many threes, and he's going to let the guys that can make threes go ahead and shoot them, but not everybody's going to attempt them.
You were up here, you and Tom Hammond were at the Kentucky-Mississippi State game, if memory serves, last month here in Lexington. So we see the rematch tomorrow. So that was, I know you've watching Kentucky game in and game out, but that was your first chance to see them in person. Just give me some impressions of what you're seeing in this team right now.
Tom, what I saw from them, from where they started the season with Duke and where they are today, it's a totally different team. I mean, this is a club that is really, they've made their mark by just doing good work defensively. And I think if they continue to do this all the way through, they're going to make the Final Four if they keep playing defense the way they're playing right now. They've got some guys that I think that take a lot of pride in being able to shut people down. Now, having said that, I will tell you that, as you well know, freshmen get a little antsy sometimes, and they have a tendency to kind of fly off the wheels. And you take a look and see how they're playing, and I just think defensively they're doing more now than that team did last year. And I know that Cal loves that defense. He loves to go out and get after people.
And you and Tom were doing games back in 2003 when Kentucky had a team that about midway through the season just became suffocating defensively. They weren't that way from the start like the 2015 team here was, but that team with Bogans and those guys that got on a run, about halfway through the season, they really committed to defense and just became suffocating, and that kind of seems what has happened with this group.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, I've watched them play probably five games, six games, and every time I watch them play, they go out there. I just think they do a terrific job. And I'll tell you what it starts with. It starts with Higgins up front. I just think he's a terrific defensive player. Now, can he do other things? Yes, he can do other things. But if what you want to do, if what you're doing is struggling with your offense, the one thing you fall back on is what you do defensively, because all defense is hard work. It's just the ability to go out and really test somebody who's controlling the ball or who's on offense. And then you make the decisions about what you're going to do defensively. Offensively, you're going to run plays. You're going to run what you're supposed to run. But defensively, you're just going to go out. And it's effort. It's more effort than it is anything else.
I just found the stat. Kentucky is indeed last in three-point attempts. And 13th is Tennessee. So two of the three best teams in the league right now are at the bottom in three-point attempts.
Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, I'm sitting here in Atlanta and watching these games, and I'm noticing that Tennessee is playing Kentucky. I think they're playing them two times.
A week from Saturday
in the next,
March 2nd.
What, 3 weeks, four
mm-hmm.
weeks?
Right.
And here they are, both of them, at the top of the ladder. And I got to tell you, somebody else that's right there, too, is LSU.
Yeah, they're playing well.
I think they're playing extremely well. I mean, they came out and had a big, big win the other night. That big comeback win. And for them, I mean, to get back into the fight again, I mean, just with Kentucky and Tennessee, it kind of reminds me of the Peach Basket days when I was playing at Kentucky.
I think it was a little later than that.
You know, they go out there, and Tennessee was always good. I cannot tell you how good they were, but Mears had those guys playing. He's just... you know, he had them in a position where they could be as good as they wanted to be, and they always played us tough. Every game they would play us tough.
Let's talk about P.J. Washington and what you're seeing in his evolution as a player in these last few
years. Well,
weeks.
I'll tell you one thing. He's one of the best rebounders the league's got. I mean, he goes in and he cleans that glass. I mean, he does it with authority. He goes inside and simply just grabs the ball. Now, can he do the other things too? Yes, he can. He can put it on the floor. He can shoot the ball. He's a good inside player. I just think he's got a lot of upside to him. And if he continues to play the way he's playing, I think he's going to be a really good NBA player. I mean, he has the good body. He's very active, always on the move, always doing something. And to have a guy like that on your squad that can go out and do numerous things. I mean, that he can do from the standpoint of handling the ball, shooting the ball, defending, rebounding. It's a little bit of everything. And I think that this is a guy, my feeling is he's probably an all-SEC performer, first team.
Kentucky's playing its way into the contender for the national championship. How deep is the pool of teams that can win it all, do you think?
Well, I'm going to take an opposite approach to this. I think there are probably only three, maybe four teams that could do this. Duke certainly is one of them. They've got incredible talent, having watched them play a lot, too. I know they lost to Gonzaga out in Hawaii, but you know what? You can't go. You want to go back and play that game again? Let's go back and play it again. I think Duke might be able to come out of that one all right. They've lost one game. They lost to Syracuse at home, which was a fluke, and they are capable of winning it all. I mean that sincerely. I think they've got the best talent of anybody in the country. I'll give you somebody else that's pretty good too, and just not because they beat them, but I think Gonzaga's pretty good. I watching them play and seeing the way that he gets his club to get out on the floor, and with the name they've got, I mean, they're always in contention to perhaps make the Final Four, which they did do. But this is a basketball team, I think, capable of winning it. I think Tennessee's capable of winning it. I think Rick Barnes has kept his club moving in the right direction. They're all playing extremely well. He's just got some great players. I think Williams may be the best player. He's one of the five or six best players in the country right now. He's just playing really well. And I think Tennessee's got a chance. I think Kentucky's got a shot at it. And the only other team that I think probably has a pretty good shot at it, and I'm going to surprise you with this, is Nevada.
Ooh.
They're very capable. I stayed up and watched them play one night, and I will tell you that having watched those games out on the West Coast is not one of my great habits that I have every time I show up to watch basketball on TV. But I will tell you that they've got a very solid basketball team, and they're doing it with a lot of transfers.
They were really good. I had a chance to watch them down in Atlanta when they lost to Loyola Chicago last year, right ahead of the Kentucky game. Larry, we got to run. I appreciate you jumping on with us. I'll holler back at you before we get to the SEC tournament, because I want to get you on to reminisce a little bit about that. This is the 40th anniversary of the Revival, so we'll talk to you about a month or so.
Really? 40 years? We never had the tournament when I was there.
That's right. Yeah, it went from, I guess, well, maybe somewhere in the 50s, and it was revived in 1979. So
that's right.
We'll do that in about a month.
Okay, Tom.
Thank you, Larry.
Okay, take care.
This is Larry Connelly. We'll come right back. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
Second half of our show for this Friday. We'll go back to the Kentucky Branded Hotline and bring on Mike DeCourcy, who joined us on Friday from SportingNews.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at TSN Mike. And we'll start with a little bracket talk, Mike, since the first bracket reveal is coming up tomorrow. They'll give us a glimpse of where the committee is here in the second weekend of February. I gave my prediction for the top four earlier: Virginia in the East, Tennessee South, Duke Midwest, Gonzaga West. What do you think?
I don't know that they'll go with Gonzaga at this point. I'll be interested to see that.
I said if they do, then I don't think Gonzaga is going to move off the one line.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting statement. Usually, when you're dealing with somebody who plays in a league like that, you need to see the volume. And I'm not saying they don't have excellent wins, and I'm not saying that that they're not outstanding, but you usually need to see that. Like when Murray State was undefeated at this point in 2012, you at that point, I a lot of brackets, only had them in to the tournament because of the likelihood that they would win the OVC. You need to see that go all the way, or get close to the end. Same with Wichita State in 2014. That you need to see them this is great, but keep doing it, and then we'll get serious. And so Gonzaga has been outstanding in a lot of ways, but their schedule, they obviously played in Maui, and that helped them a lot. But then they lost to Carolina and Tennessee, and some of the other games that they won haven't held up as much as well as you'd like. So as a result, I'm not sure that they'll go with a one at this point. If, like you said, if they do, then it'd be hard for them to lose it. Obviously, they could lose in league. It's becoming less likely because they've just controlled the league so well. But if they were able to be on the one line now, they'd really be in great shape relative to March.
Barring just some really surprising upsets that might happen, would you think that Kentucky and Michigan maybe are the only other two contenders for a one? Possibly Carolina, since they've got two games with Duke and one with Virginia?
Yeah, and I wouldn't totally rule Michigan State out, but Michigan State now would have to go from winning streak to losing streak to winning streak again. They would have to pretty much close out with no losses or no loss until the Big Ten final.
They have the most quadrant one wins, I saw.
Yeah, so they have great strength, but that three-game losing streak hurts. And although those of us who cover the Big Ten closely know that Illinois is really dangerous, they're still sitting there at 8-15 or whatever, and that's not going to look good in the committee room. So that may not look as bad as 8-15 by the time we get to March, but it's still not. I mean, they're not going to win all the rest of their games and make it look attractive. So that'll hurt them. But I wouldn't rule out them, because if they were to go on that winning streak, that would include then a sweep of Michigan. And that might get it. That might include another Purdue or another Maryland or another Wisconsin, something like that. So I think they're still in the picture. Carolina was a great one to mention, though, because they've played great since the awful Louisville game, the first meeting. And they have the two games against Duke that are great opportunities for them, and I believe one against Virginia.
In Chapel Hill.
Yeah, so they actually could get there as well, although – you know, I think they're outstanding, but I'm not sure that they, again, I'm not saying that they can't get there, but I'm saying I don't expect them to be there.
Yeah. For Kentucky, obviously, that's the thing people in this audience are most concerned about. For Kentucky to get to the one seed line, what do you think it takes? Does it take sweeping Tennessee, splitting? Could they get there with splitting against Tennessee?
Yeah, they can, and I, you know, this is why I went back and said, I think 2 weeks ago, the week they played Kansas, that they need to win the league, because winning this league conveys a lot. Now, I mean, I guess it's technically possible for them still to win the league while being swept by Tennessee, or at least get a share, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about beating Tennessee for the league, which at least involves a split there. And then, you know, you also would have to take care of LSU at home and probably Mississippi State tomorrow. You could probably, I think you could split with Tennessee and still drop one other somewhere and still win it. You know, because again, of course that would require Tennessee probably losing a game also. But you don't, you sit here in February and you in your mind, you look at things and say, well, we're probably, you know, they're going to be favored in all these games, but the favorite doesn't always win every game. So you look at what's likely, and Tennessee is, you know, Tennessee is likely to drop some game somewhere aside from you know, like being likely to split home and home with the Cats. So I think that UK could get to the league title with a split with Tennessee, but you know, obviously, their best case scenario for getting a one would be to win the league by only losing the other game to Tennessee.
Kentucky is playing tremendously well defensively right now, but I think there's still a good bit of upside left for them on the offensive end. Who else do you think? And I guess number one, would you agree with that? And number two, who else has a significant amount of upside left that they could tap into?
You mean within the UK offense?
Right. I would just think between now and February, they're playing so well defensively, they could get, 10% better or something, 5%, I don't know. But they're playing pretty close to a peak level, I would think, defensively. But offensively,
right.
I think they've got a good bit of room for improvement left that they could tap into potentially. Number one, do you think that's accurate? And number two, who else would – have,
well, you know, I would say that defensively, that I agree that the rotation, the way it's being played, you know, can only get a little bit better defensively. But I still maintain that if you can make Nick a more regular player, if he could, if Nick Richards could play, I mean, the last series of games, he's played 11, 5, 19, 9, and 10 minutes. So that's five games averaging about 10 minutes. And most of that is limited to that level because in a lot of games he doesn't rebound. And so if Nick, South Carolina, he rebounded okay, 4 and 11 minutes, and Mississippi State, he rebounded very well, 6 and 10 minutes against a very good team. So, I still think if he can play more minutes, and I'm talking about get up to maybe 15, 17, I think that makes your defense even better because he adds a level of shot blocking that isn't there in the other six players. So that's one. From the offensive standpoint, I think you're 100% right, and I think that comes from almost everybody with the exception of PJ. Mm-hmm. Because the way the offense goes right now, and you know, I think this is one of their great strengths, is that if somebody's not playing well offensively on a given day, then they can go other directions. Against South Carolina, Keldon was only 2 of 9. That's okay. I mean, you don't want him to be 2 of 9. You'd rather him be 2 of 7, maybe. But it's okay because PJ was great, and Tyler played better offensively than he has in some games, and EJ was great off the bench, obviously. So you got along fine. But you know what makes you better is fewer nights where somebody's off. I mean, as you get later in the season, you should have fewer nights where somebody's off. Now, there'll be nights where somebody gets taken out, and I expect that'll happen to PJ to some extent as he's gotten so good in the last half dozen games or so, that I think that down the stretch, there'll be people that say, okay, we can't let PJ beat us. Let the other guys. Kentucky has the ability for the other guys to do it. But I do think that there'll, especially teams that aren't in competition with you for first division, league championship, whatever. A team like Missouri is a great example. Missouri did a wonderful job. I was in Knoxville on Tuesday. They did a wonderful job taking out Grant Williams against Tennessee on Tuesday. It wasn't like an impressive, like we're going to take him out and not let him touch it. But they did some things. They sort of did some, tricked up some things. I thought what they did really well was they let Grant touch the ball early in possessions. And because they have sort of a flow offense that doesn't often get cut short in the middle of a possession by someone getting open or someone taking an open shot, even if it's there, they play to the end of the possession. They allowed Grant to touch it early and then shut him down late in a possession. So He wasn't able to get good shots because the good shots he had were in the first 10 seconds of the clock, and they're looking for the good shot in the last 15. So they might do some things, for instance, to take out PJ. But I think by and large, you're looking at a team that really could grow simply by guys becoming more comfortable on a consistent basis.
Dial in Mike DeCourcy at TSN Mike on Twitter, sportingnews.com on the web. We'll be right back. It's the Leach Report, Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter, at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Mike DeCourcy is with us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline from sportingnews.com. If you go there to the NCAA basketball page, you can find Mike's story that he did recently on the Vols. And I was just noticing a post that you had on Twitter. There's never been a NCAA champion with a recruiting profile of this year's Tennessee team. We'll talk a lot about this matchup with Kentucky next Friday, but tell me what you found when you went down to visit the Vols.
Well, I got a chance to spend a little time with Grant Williams on Tuesday night, and found him to be really pleasant and very bright. But what I was talking about in that in the story and in the post was you look at their rotation and the guys who play regularly, and they do not have a single player on their roster or in their rotation who was ranked by 24/7 Sports. My, you know, I always cite them because one, their website's really good, and two, the guys that work there I know very well. Evan Daniels, who used to live there in Lexington, Brian Snow, who lives here in Indy, and Josh Gerson, who's out west. Those guys are really good, and Dave Tellep preceded them, so I know that a lot of the historic rankings include him, and Dave's now a NBA scout with the San Antonio Spurs, so I really trust their judgment. And so I looked back, and you see the numbers on the guys who are playing regularly for UT. And Grant Williams was 191. Admiral Schofield was something like 254. You don't see that with teams that reach the number one ranking, even, and certainly not that win the national championship. People looked at the Villanova team when they won it in 2016, and I remember specifically conversing with people after the game who are sort of basketball historians like me, and we wondered if that Villanova team had sort of broken the paradigm that you had to have a first-round pick on your team in order to win it. And, of course, subsequently, Josh Hart had a great senior year and went in the first round, and Mikal Bridges came back last year and was fabulous and went very high in the first round, so they ended up with a couple. But you look at their team, at the one that won it, and people look at that as a team that didn't have a lot of elite recruits, and almost every player in the rotation was a top 100 guy. There was one player, Daryl Reynolds, who was like 354, I think, and then everybody else was in double digits. So it just shows how really unusual what Tennessee is doing at this point to be ranked number one, to be 21-1. It's really remarkable what the players are doing, what Rick Barnes is doing. And Tom, it's also kind of funny because if you bring it up to the coaches, it kind of hurts their feelings. You know, they were smart enough to scout these guys and figure out they could do this, and good enough coaches that to bring them along to this point to number one in the country. But they get insulted by the idea that they if you tell them that their guys were three-star recruits.
That's funny. Kentucky, Mississippi State tomorrow. Any worries for the Big Blue Nation?
Yeah, because obviously you have to, like, if UT goes out and plays, excuse me, if UK goes out and plays the way they did at Florida or in the second half against South Carolina, they'll be fine, I would think. But they don't always do that. I mean, the game at Auburn was questionable for a time. The Florida game was dicey for the first, I don't know, 30 minutes or so. So you got to play that, at least that well at portions of the game. Now, I really respected what they did in the Florida game in those last 10 minutes or so to flip the game and just take control and to shut it down. I thought they did a beautiful job of closing that out. But they have to defend the three-point shot really well. Force Quindary Weatherspoon into bad shots. You can do that. If you get him into a position where he thinks he's open, but it's not a good shot, he'll take it, and he's less likely to make that than he is to make a good shot that's out of the offense. So you can get him to do that. But they are an excellent three-point shooting team, so you have to be really careful about how you manage the three-point line.
Mike DeCourcy, thank you much.
Okay, you bet, Tom.
Mike DeCourcy joins us every Friday from SportingNews.com, and we're heading to a break. We'll come back to wrap up this edition of the Leach Report just a minute with some interesting comments from Cal from my pregame interview with him on Tuesday night.
Find out more about the Voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Friday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. It's been 3 months since that awful start to the basketball season for Kentucky, and my, how things have changed for the Wildcats. They're in the top five now, playing themselves into contention for a potential one seed on Selection Sunday, too. Next up, a trip to Mississippi State tomorrow. A team Kentucky handled easily in Lexington, but State shot the ball so poorly that you have to think the Bulldogs will play better in this rematch. But the way Kentucky's defending, that might not matter. John Calipari often talks about the good kind of swagger he likes to see in his teams, and I asked him if he is seeing that yet in this group.
I'm not sold yet, but they're confident, but there are times in the game they're still fragile. but they're working through it because of how they're practicing. Guys are spending extra time. Guys are getting after it, and it shows. It shows in the games. And when they demonstrate performance in the games, that's where you build your confidence and you create a swagger where you expect something good to happen. The other thing is for all these guys, not just PJ, but we got to get conditioned that we're playing 40 minutes. Don't worry about the score. Just play. Let the score take care of itself.
That was from the pregame interview I did with Cal back on Tuesday before the win over South Carolina. We also talked about PJ Washington, who then went out and had another 20-point game.
Here's what you don't see. So we practice. He finishes first in every run. Everything we're doing, he's finishing first. He's taking control of practice, which is what you're now seeing in the game. The greatest thing happened to him is he played Kansas. Against Kansas, he was challenged. He missed every three-point shot, 0 for 4. And everyone who evaluated him, everyone who watched the game, bragged about him. And he was 0 for 4 from the three, which means that's not how you're being judged. So if you make him, you make him. If you don't, you don't. Don't play for that. It's all that other stuff you did. And so now, you know, he's in a groove, and I'm telling him that, you know, the biggest thing he used to have is lapses. He'd go 3-4 minutes and, like, get beat and that, you know, or score it on and miss and shoot an air ball and miss 5 free throws, and that's been eliminated. But it's been eliminated because of how he's practicing.
Interesting stuff from Cal there. And in watching PJ lately, the thing that jumps out at me is he's really attacking the glass on missed shots to start the game. And there's always been the knock on PJ about the motor and keeping it revving. And it seems like that is what is getting the motor revving early. And then he's been able to keep it going. And the points come after that. So we'll see if that continues tomorrow down in Starkville. Tito's Vodka Race of the Week is at Tampa Bay Downs. It's a prep for the Tampa Bay Derby, so it's on the road to the Kentucky Derby, the Sam F. Davis Stakes for three-year-olds. Nick's Go, who won the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity here at Keeneland last fall, is probably going to be the favorite in there, I would think. There's also a Pletcher horse that might get some money. But the third choice of the morning line is a horse coming off a really nice maiden win named Kentucky Wildcat. That's the horse's name. And he's my pick to win this race tomorrow. I was really impressed by his last race. And if he can win this tomorrow, he starts to make himself a Derby contender. That'd be kind of fun to have a horse named Kentucky Wildcat in the field for the Derby. All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll see you on Monday with Kyle Tucker on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Whenever you miss a show, and be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to leachreport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on the Leach Report Radio Network.